Hollywood is rated LGBT radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this installment of Rated LGBT Radio. Today we have a fantastic show set up for you, and I am thrilled and excited to do this show. Full disclosure, today is the day of the solar eclipse, and many people have predicted that today is the day of the rapture. So if you're hearing us, one of two things has happened. One, the rapture has never happened, won't happen, and it didn't happen today, and we're all fine. Or two, it happened, and we're all the ones that got left behind. And in that case, we're still going to entertain you and have lots of fun, so stay tuned. This show, normally every week when we bring you this podcast, it is seamless. Technology is our friend. It's really wonderful. This show, this episode, was supposed to air last Thursday, and the servers that support the show went down because they're in an area that was getting rainfall, and apparently servers and rainfall don't mix. And then just a little while ago, we had started the show again, and the internet went down. So technology has not been our friend today. We're hoping it is whatever ghosts in it were upset with us prior have become appeased and are peaceful and happy, and they're going to sit back and just enjoy the show. We've got some good music coming your way, a great guest, and even some news. So let's dial it up to our guest. Our guest is one I'm super, super excited about, Tom Goss. He is a favored singer-songwriter, especially in the LGBTQ community. A lot of his music, and he is prolific. He has produced so many pieces of work over the past few years. I think he's got like 9 albums, a bunch of EPs, 40 music videos. His music videos have been seen 200 or 20 million times. A whole library of material. Tom's voice and music is so accessible. It is like musically sitting down with a good friend and talking over life's issues and experiences, and incredibly, incredibly relatable, with a gorgeous voice and a melodic delivery bar none. He has one song in the past few years that I have listened to for literally years that means a lot to me, which I'll bring up to him later in the show. But today we are really focusing on his latest work, an incredible album, which I keep playing over and over again, called Remember What It Feels Like. And we've got 2 of the tracks of that album set up. So we're going to listen to some of his new music and talk about his life experience that created all of this great musical artwork. Before we do that, and this is where the show went badly the last time I tried this, so keep your fingers crossed, we're going to go to Brody Levesque. Brody is the editor-in-chief of the Los Angeles Blade magazine, and that is a publication you should be checking out every single day for the latest and greatest LGBTQ stories. Brody deploys a troop of journalists who create original stories for the magazine, so you won't be reading that material anywhere else, and it is definitely worth your while. So with the latest breaking stuff, here is Brody.
Okay, Rob, good afternoon to our listeners, or good morning, depending on where you're at. I hope you all enjoyed your eclipse watching. I was fortunate enough to have a young person that I know who was in the zone FaceTime with me from the heartland of America. I got to watch it. I thought it was pretty cool. He actually took a pair of the eclipse sunglasses, put them over the camera lenses of his iPhone, and so we got to watch it. It was really kind of neat. Okay, while we're talking about eclipses, the Vatican today released a long-awaited doctrine of faith that took about 5 years to prepare. Unfortunately, it's a really onerous document as far as the LGBTQ community is concerned. On Monday, the Vatican condemned gender-affirming surgeries and what they called gender theory. According to the document released under Pope Francis's signature, it says, and I, you know, quoting the Associated Press, a man and a woman are biologically different and should not try to make oneself God. It continues, it follows that any sex change intervention as a rule risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the moment of conception. And then it goes on. Obviously, it condemns gender-affirming care for minors. It goes on to, you know, more or less just attack the trans community. It just, there's not a lot of bright spots with the document. It is not unexpected. Most Vatican watchers have felt that this document was going to be coming. It looked like the Pope was kind of softening his stance a little bit. He'd done some public events with trans folks in the papal audiences, and he had gotten on people, but apparently there are limitations to his largesse. And as I said, they've now just completely, you know, entrenched themselves into an anti-LGBTQ dogma. Meshing that, the American Library Association, which is headquartered in Chicago, released a report today that going back over this last year that just ended, there was a 65% increase in censorship, which is book banning and challenging. This is in libraries and, of course, schools and school libraries. Over 4,240 unique titles and authors came under scrutiny. It should be noted that probably little over two-thirds dealt with LGBTQ people or authors or stories and themes. The rest were centered in on race and race relations. And again, as they get ready to go into Free the Between the Lines as a theme for Banned Books Week 2024, which is coming up, the American Libraries Association is cautioning that, you know, censorship is getting increasingly worse in the United States, and it is a real danger. So we have a bright bit of news, I guess. Tomorrow in the Hawaiian Islands, Hawaii Senate will be voting on a measure. It's a proposed amendment to the state constitution. It was passed by the Hawaii House this past week. Essentially, what this thing will do is it will protect same-sex marriage in the Constitution. Now, this is done through an amendment process through the voters. Amendment HD1 would remove a particular article, which is the article that essentially restricts same-sex marriages. It'll go to the ballot. If the voters approve, then it'll be added into Hawaii's constitution. And that basically is coming on the heels, of course, of Ogerbefell and also a ruling from the Hawaii State Supreme Court that same-sex marriage was, in fact, a violation of the constitutional bar on sex discrimination. That court had actually ordered the lower court to look at itself. They reversed themselves. And then, of course, in 2015, we had Ogerbefell. So this will go to the Senate tomorrow once it goes through the process, which is expected. It has to be approved with 2/3 of the senators. And it doesn't appear that there's any real opposition to it. It'll be placed on the November ballot. And with that, of course, the Leahy voters will ultimately decide what they want to do. And the last thing to note that I wanted to mention, the Centers for Disease Control and Disease Prevention in Atlanta have notified those of us in the press that health officials are seeing a sharp, sharp uptick in mpox, or monkeypox as it's sometimes referred to, cases. So far, 570 have been reported in the United States. This is an infection rate, while lower than what we saw in the outbreak in 2022, where we were averaging 470 cases per week. The latest data coming out of CDC, however, is a cautionary note that with 570 cases so far nationwide in 2024, that the mpox has not gone away. It still remains to be something that you know, needs to be dealt with. The CDC, of course, is emphasizing that most of the cases that they are seeing are coming from individuals who are either unvaccinated or under-vaccinated. So they're still recommending particularly gay and bisexual men, actually any men who have sex with men, to go out and get themselves vaccinated so that we don't see another health crisis on the horizon come this summer. And that's basically just a summation of a relatively busy Eclipse Monday. And hopefully we can get through the rest of the broadcast without any more interruptions. Rob?
Okay, great. All right, thanks, Brody. And just to comment on the first story, it seems like the Catholic Church is hell-bent on always being on the wrong side of history. I mean, they were just barely starting to recently get warmed up on same-sex marriage. You know, not that they've totally reversed themselves, but as they made progress there, then boom, they've got to show, no, we're still archaic. So just sad at the opportunity they could take to be real leaders in the world. But anyway, I guess what do you expect? All right, with that, let's please welcome to the show probably my most patient guest ever, Tom Gott. Tom, welcome. Oh, my God.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, you know, I fought to have you. I have fought every battle to have you. It's like they will not keep you from me, I swear. But welcome to the show.
It's great to be
so
here.
Tom, oh, it's great to talk to you. I don't know if I mentioned it. I mentioned in the one piece that we got derailed on, but you put out a song a number of years ago that I have listened to literally every single year since it came out, and
yeah,
now I'll
reveal
why.
I'm really curious.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean,
and take
the, it the way you're saying you listen to it every year makes it feel like it like commemorates a specific event, which makes me think it's Gay Christmas.
Gay Christmas. That is it. That song.
Oh, wow! I nailed it. Okay, great.
Yeah. Totally. No, but it's like you're literally in, I'm still on the old iPod thing, and you're literally in my Christmas mix every single year. Because it's just, it's so, there's a sadness about the song. And I'm exactly as you depict in the song. I'm raised by a Republican family, very supportive of who I am and everything else. You know, stood up for my relationship, still come home and, you know, they're voting for all the people that work against me. And, you know, it's like, and there's this huge disconnect of what they represent to the world and what our personal relationships are. And it's mm-hmm. like, I have never heard anything or even read anything that has expressed that situation as poignantly as your song.
Well, means a lot to me. You know, that song, you know, came from, obviously, that song released in 2017. Donald Trump was elected in 2016. I don't think I have to explain to anybody kind of the divide that had in American families, especially in the Midwest or the Heartland or Middle America, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, it became very clear to me at that time that, like, you know, I was invisible. And I think I've always felt kind of a little invisible, because when you think differently, it's easy to be dismissed. And I really think it's that, you know, for me, that the gayness is a big part of it, but there's a lot of other ways in which I perceive the world that are probably colored by my experience that they see it differently. And so, yeah, I mean, so then that came out the next year after my family stopped talking to me pretty much unilaterally, which was really hard on me because I love them so much and I want them in my life. My brother still hasn't talked to me. So it's been 8 years since my brother has talked to me. And it's horrible. I think about it every day and it makes me sad. And sometimes, you know, I really do think about that song, because I do think if I hadn't written that song and released that song, I wonder if my brother would be talking to me at this point in time. And so sometimes I wonder, like, if I think about the things that I've created in my career, if there's anything that I regret. And I think sometimes I think about that song as maybe being one of them, but ultimately it really speaks to people, and it really puts a voice to a feeling that I think you're right, that nobody else is doing, and that's really hard to articulate because it comes from such an isolated place. And
you're dead on. In fact, it's I can see why it might have caused personal division, you know, because you were brave in putting it out. You were very brave in making that
statement.
Well,
let's be clear. Like, the division was there already. Like, my family had already stopped talking to me. I didn't do anything. And I also would like to say, just in defense of it, is that I don't say anything bad in that song. I say it's hard. It's hard to be a person that is unseen. And I think, you know, coming from, like, a very stern, kind of, like, bury your emotions, be repressed is the way to go. I think for me, that was the most, for my family, that was kind of the most egregious thing, is to even talk. And so, you know, it's kind of like, we'll show you, invisible, you know. Like, I think that's kind of where it is at this point. And it's also like, you know, every year, it's like, My point is just proved more and more. Just love me for who I am. I love you for who you are. This is great. Let's do this, you know? I love my family, and I want nothing more than to have a good relationship with them.
Yeah, no, I think that is, I mean, that's the case for me too, and a case for a lot of us. I guess for me, the other thing that colored my experience that was why your song hit so deeply and dead on was I'm a little bit older, and I was living through a period where my closest friends were all coming down with AIDS and dying, and I was speaking at memorials, and I'd go home to my Republican family, and all of that disappeared. I mean, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like that whole experience of my life was then invisible. So I had to walk in and talk about the weather and talk about this and talk about that. And they voted for all these people who were wanting to ignore, you know, that AIDS even existed and, you know, all of that. So it was just, you just nailed it. And what you do, I mean, most of your work is like, you hone very, obviously, personal things from your own life, but they're very much things that I think a lot of us can relate to and value you putting out there. So, I mean, huge, huge tribute to you. I want to take us back though to your beginning. Because you were born to a pair of, you're born in a Catholic family and your folks were gym owners, which made you like athletic at a young age, and but then you decided to become a priest at a certain point. What was your impetus for going in that direction?
Well, I think ultimately my career's ended, right? I mean, I wrestled through college, and there's not really anything after that. So it's just like, what are you going to do? I think like most people, you're just trying to figure out how to be an adult after college. And the idea of moving back to Wisconsin, I went to school in Missouri, moving back to Wisconsin, getting a job teaching social studies and coaching wrestling, and, you know, getting a little house and getting a dog and getting married and all that kind of, like, really normal stuff which the world expects of you, especially growing up in the Midwest, it just didn't really appeal to me. I was struggling with that. I didn't know how to see the world any other way. And I think there was an idea that came to me that was just like, oh, what if you were a priest? Then you could be kind of free to do whatever you wanted to do in terms of not tied down by a family, and move around the country and sometimes around the world, just like working for different parishes and really be a part of people's lives in really impactful times, you know, marriages and baptisms and funerals, and really be a part of, be impactful in the most important parts, times in people's lives. And when I had that idea, it just really clicked to me and just thought, wow, that's perfect. Because I knew I didn't want kind of the, whatever the normal was. And I wasn't self-identifying as gay. I was really unaware of my sexuality at the time. And so it seemed like a really great way for me to live a life that's different within the confines of heteronormative society that I had grown up in.
Do you feel like...
Does that make sense?
Is this interesting? Oh, it makes total sense. In fact, the thing that is sort of, it seems a little bit profound to me is the fact that you, in the role of a priest, you wanted to impact people's lives. And, you know, even though you're not wearing a collar and you're not having a congregation or anything like that, with your music and the songs that you write, you're really kind of doing exactly that. Is that a through line for you?
I think that's 100% true. And I think that, you know, sometimes friends of mine or people will just kind of like, oh, well, it's so interesting to see you in seminary. Like, I wonder what you were like. And I'm like, seriously, I was probably pretty much the same. I just chose a different platform. I've always wanted to be, like, the community that I joined because they were working in ecumenism and interreligious dialogue and reconciliation. And these are things that are really important to me. And ultimately, that's what I'm doing. It's an interesting to start the interview with Gay Christmas and how, in some ways, that was divisive. When ultimately everything I do is in hopes of reconciliation, is in hopes of understanding one another more fully. I think I'm similar. I think my mission is similar. It always has been. My platform just shifted.
And in your musical journey there, you have, romance has been a big theme throughout, and you've had kind of personal challenges in your own romance, your own romantic life.
Sure.
How has that impacted, and, you know, how have you integrated that into the songs that you then put out?
Well, I think, you know, if you think about my records up to 2016, probably, was really a lot of, you know, I'm so grateful to have met my husband and to be in love and to be married. And my parents hate each other, and they got divorced at a very young age. And I never had any examples of love, and all my examples of relationship in my own life felt very painful. And so for me, I made a decision at a really young age. I can remember the moment where I was walking from my mom's house to my dad's house. You know, it was like every other weekend thing. And just being so sad and thinking to myself that I'm not going to be in a relationship. I'm not going to have kids. It isn't worth it. I'm sure there's benefits to it, but the risk that I hurt somebody as deeply as I'm hurt right now is too high. I was probably 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I just shut that part of my life off. And when I left seminary and I met Mike, and I fell madly in love, like, immediately, and I started, you know, the relationship in him and the way that he saw me and the way that we communicated and the way that he listened and the way that we communicated just inside of me. And I understood the power and the appeal of that for the first time in my life. And so for me, it was and it is the most precious thing that we can have, period, end of story. So it's so powerful, it's so healing, it's so beyond us as individuals. You know, at some point in time, I caught my husband cheating on me, and that was really hard for me, really shook the foundation. The new foundation mm-hmm. that I had created, you know, the thing that I'm saying to you is the new foundation in which I had created for myself. And then, you know, he really wanted to explore an open relationship. And so I had to really kind of deconstruct my ideology and my thinking and the way that I saw the world once again. And that was really difficult. And, you know, looking at what society tells me is important and what society deems its rules and saying what works for me and what doesn't. At this point in time, I'm probably in my mid-30s, and, you know, I'm well-adjusted, I'm smart. And so I started picking apart what worked for me and what didn't. And I met a guy, and for me, what works for me is emotional attachment. And so I'm not really a kind of person in an open relationship that's going to have frivolous sex sounds judgmental. I don't mean it to be.
Right.
But for me, there really has to be a strong emotional connection. And so, of course, I fell in love again. So, you know, I was dating this guy while I was married to my husband, and that was interesting and difficult and rewarding. And, you know, I wrote a whole record about it. That's what Territories is about. It's about falling in love with somebody else when you're married to somebody else. And try to navigate those feelings and navigate what the world says about that and understand my own feelings and kind of block out the noise, like what works for me and what do I believe. And yeah, it was really interesting and really wonderful for a while. And then turns out he wasn't a real person. Like, she was a fictional person. And so, you know, he's in prison now, and he wasn't an authentic person. And I'm laughing about it because I'm kind of fine with it, you know. I'm never going to shame myself or begrudge myself for loving another person. I always
right.
want to be a kind of person that moves forward with love and who has an open heart and an open mind and is authentic in everything that I do. And if that means that I get hurt sometimes, that's kind of part of the deal. I can choose to make those pain parts define me, or I can choose to say, hey, that happened, turn it into art if it seems interesting, and continue to be steadfast in how I believe I want to live in this world. So that
yeah.
was a very that was a lot.
Well, and to the point of that relationship, one of the songs on the current album is about that. And if you're okay
mm-hmm.
with it, we can play that right now.
Of course, let's do it.
Okay. And here is the song tribute to the lover with the fictitious past, Not My Problem by Tom Goss.
You met me in the dark in the middle of the night, and you told me how you crave me. Well, I took it all in stride, then I came back for more. That's how you learned to tame me. And all your secret lies and the protection it bought with that, the stolen money. Can't buy you what you lost and the records you cost. Stop saying that you love me.
'cause I'm already gone. In another year from now, I hope that you remember how I was led through every route. But I'm no longer when you're in your prison cell, crying about how it all fell, and you had nothing left to sell. Well, it's not my problem anymore. For better or for worse, where the romance is at, if everything is praying. The better or coerced, all the rest is an act. The worst is all remaining. You're always full of wisdom, life's a lesson. You say in the world is just your classroom. You're falling and you're getting no confession. We'll save it. It's time to shed your costume. And I never was your bridegroom. In another year from now, I hope that you remember. Another year from now, I hope that you remember how I was there through every route. But I'm no longer when you're in your prison cell, crying about how it all fell, and you had nothing left to sell. Well, it's not.
Awesome. Oh, my God. So awesome.
Thank you.
The one thing about your songs, and particularly the album Remember What It Feels Like, I see a kind of Stephen Sondheim-ness about your music, where it's very, like, there's a almost like a dramatic through line. It's like I hear this story behind a lot of the songs and kind of want to see the whole storyline behind them into one theatrical piece. But, you know, and obviously that one is like right on target with that, you know, of the ex who was a fraud, which is, we've run into those. Yeah. It's like, I've got a few of those littered in my past as well.
I think we all do. And I appreciate that compliment. Like, I always want to tell a story. There's no point in writing a song unless you're, like, saying something.
Yeah, no, it's like, a lot of them are sort of that sort of poignant send in the clowns kind of viewpoint. The one thing, when listening to that album, or listening to this album, it's like there's a lot that is, first of all, there's a lot of the songs that I appreciate because they exhibit a certain level of maturity. It's not like naive bubblegum type stuff. It is like definitely has some of that little bit more mature insight to it, but it's still romantic and reminiscent. And I was, like, getting carried up in that. And then I looked at the title, and it was like, of course, Remember What It Feels Like. This is perspective of looking back over a personal history and looking back on those moments. How did you get that inspiration to come up with this collection?
Well, it's an interesting thing because, you know, I have a studio in LA, and so the way that I produce music has changed a lot in the past couple of years. and I'm just writing songs and producing songs. And I was, you know, got to the point where I just had like 25 tracks done and finished. And I was like, maybe I should release some of this, because releasing music's pretty horrible, to be honest with you. Making music is really fun. And so I started looking at like what collection of songs would make sense together, what could kind of feel like a fun, cohesive kind of experience. And the 15 tracks that I put on the record are what I had decided on. And, you know, like you said, there's a lot of different emotions kind of that's the through line. It's not like a conceptual album like Territories was. It's coming over a period of years and a bunch of different experiences. And so I was really just in kind of the mix of the discovering that my ex was a fraud and him being in prison and processing those emotions and really deciding that I didn't really want that to define me or even really make me that sad. Like, of course, I want to mourn the loss of somebody that I love, but not too long, to be honest with you. I want to use it to make me a stronger and better person. And so I was just thinking about, and there was the first line of a song on that album called Literally is, I remember what it feels like. And often I'll listen to the record just to think of, like, what is this titled if I'm not really sure. And that line struck me of, like, I remember what it feels like. Like, instead of being, like, an active remembering, just a lesson to, like, remember what these things feel like. Because ultimately that song's about the X2. It's called Literally. Like, if you literally cannot stop me. Like, no matter what you do to me, I'm still going to be me. I'm still going to create. I'm still going to be this positive life force. There's nobody on earth that can stop me from doing that. That if I ever want to stop doing that, that's a choice that I will make on my own, you know? And so it just got me thinking about the ideas of our experiences being who we are, and we can take or leave any experience that we want at any point in time. There's an interesting thing, you know, the stuff that happened was really shitty, but ultimately it's kind of inspiring. It's kind of inspiring to see this person who just was like, this is who I'm going to be. And then he was that, you know? It's like, it's insane, but it's also like, man, good on you for saying, like, this is who I'm going to be in the world, even though I'm not that. I'm a piece of shit, and I have no qualifications to be that. And I think in realizing that he had done that, it gave me permission to just be whoever I wanted to be, too. So have the experiences, good, bad, indifferent. Remember what they feel like in your heart, but don't dwell on them. Don't live a life of resentment or bitterness or toxic positivity or anything. Like, don't swing any way, you know? Just remember what it feels like. Move on. Let it color your decision, but not in a way that's, like, that's entrapping you into one feeling.
Right. Yeah, and one thing I've talked to people about is, you know, don't overlearn the lesson. You know, it's like you have one experience and, you know, there's this tendency to, like, well, I'm never going to do that again. I'm never going to fall. It's like, don't overlearn it. It's like it was one thing. The thing that I think is interesting is the song that immediately follows Not My Problem on the album is your song Something Beautiful, which is like this gorgeous song. And like, if of course, if I was putting this into our Stephen Sondheim-esque show, this would be like the last song of the first act, showstopper, you know, music swells, all that kind of song. But Something Beautiful is so kind of reminiscent of that moment when you meet somebody and you're full of, you know, just enamored, and it's so beautiful in that feeling. And that kind of ties into what I think you were just saying in terms of, like, you know, for me, because I've had relationships with different gaslighters in my life, and, you know, but there was a point there where things were innocent with us and things weren't crazy and, you know, and all that. And there was a beautiful connection that happened regardless of what was to come. You know, it's like, and that something beautiful, your song, Something Beautiful, put me there in that mindset of just enjoying, you know, and going back to those moments and enjoying those experiences. So just, I don't really have a question on that. It's just really awesome and, you know, excellent piece.
No, and I had never even thought about that, you know, those two songs existing side by side in that way. But I really like the way that you're framing it, because it almost feels like, you know, don't overlearn the lesson. I love that, you know, because it's you're saying like, you're not my problem anymore. Fuck you. You know, this horrible thing happened, et cetera, et cetera. And then you meet somebody else and you're like, hey, I'm still open to this. So show me something beautiful. Let's do this again. Maybe with different outcomes, maybe not. Who knows? But we're open to it. And I think that's all we can do as human beings, is be open to whatever experience comes.
Absolutely. I think there is a tendency, and it's a human tendency, not just an LGBTQ tendency, but to generalize. And, you know, it's like from our own personal experiences where we get burned by one person, therefore every man we meet is going to do the same thing. But I hear generalized about, you know, well, all gay men, blah, blah, blah. And it's like there are millions of gay men. Not all gay men are going to do anything alike. It's, you know, it's like we all get that individuality. But I've got another song.
It's easy to say this is how the world is. This is what I must do. These are the lines that I have drawn. It's much harder to say, like, there are no lines. There are no categories. Everybody is different. I have to learn from everybody that I meet. That's a lot harder.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a challenge, because you have to be willing to walk in a state of, and I mean this in a positive way, kind of human ignorance, so that when you meet a new person, you're willing to be ignorant as to who they are until you get to know them. You don't, you know, make assumptions. You don't, you know, it's like, oh, they got brown eyes, that means blah, 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 or, you know, oh, they're
and you're,
you know,
willing
this
to
weight.
Be wrong,
that means,
and you're willing to have to change. Like, that's the hard part about it, is that you have to change. And
exactly.
That's just life. We're not going to resent the change, because what's the use in that?
Yeah, totally. So I've got another song that we want to play. And this one, I'm going to be right up front about, it literally calls me on my stuff. As I am guilty of what this song is about. And so I'm going to play that, and it's called The Enemy of Good. So here we go.
When you think about the life that you're building, don't get caught up in the thought you're not worth it. So you haven't got a paper from an Ivy League. So you haven't got a Sukkot that's a color green. Just remember, everything is for a reason. Just remember, every flower has a season. The beautiful, the powerful aren't always what they seem. The wonderful is underfoot, it's not a mystery. And you can't see just what I can't see. No, darling, cause you're not grounded in reality. Perfect's the enemy of good, yeah. Like they're important. Imperfections you're trying to gloss them over. But all your cracks, they keep you intact. They make you something worth holding. And you can't see just what I can't see. No, darling, cause you are drowning in a fantasy. Perfect's the enemy of good, yeah. Perfect's the enemy of good. Perfect's the enemy of good. Perfect's the enemy of good. You're caught at what you think you could. It's what you can, not what you should. Perfect's the enemy of good, yeah. Perfect's the enemy of good, yeah. You're caught at what you think you could, yeah. It's what you can, not what you should, yeah. So don't go breaking your own heart. There's no regretting all the things that fell apart, 'cause in the end you're understood. Perfect's the enemy of good. Perfect's the enemy of good, yeah. 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 Perfect's the enemy of you.
Holy, that is me. Like, striving for perfection and and plagued by it sometimes. So yeah, that's awesome.
I get it.
And now what was that a note to yourself? I mean, was that self?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was doing the artist way. I don't know if you've ever done the artist way, but it's an interesting exercise to do. And I don't know, it just kind of popped into my head, this thing that my mom used to say, is perfect is the enemy of the good. And so I sat down and I just, you know, the song kind of came out of me and I was really excited. My mom doesn't like any of my slow songs. So I was really excited that, one, it was fast, and two, I'd be like, hey, mom, look, I listened to you, you know? And it was really funny because I sent it to her when I finished it. And I was like, you're going to love this song, you know? And she was like, I've never said that in my life. I was like, uh-oh. Okay. What am I going to do? But, yeah, it was like a typical kind of mom situation. But, yeah, you know, she, like, proved the point of the song. You know, like, trying to be a perfect song. Did it work? So, yeah, it's pretty funny.
No. I'm not going to disagree with your mom on a lot of things. I love your slow song, so, you know.
No, I love my mom. I feel like this is a very negative family. I love my family so much. I love my family so much. But we obviously have a very, very clear communication issues. That would be great if they weren't there.
Oh, my God. So, one thing in a lot of your songs, you touch on different kinds of relationships and different kind of nuanced stuff that, again, are not really sung about elsewhere. At least I haven't heard them. One song on this album, Cleopatra, is like, I mean, it's like, should be like the Will and Grace theme song, honestly. You know, and it's a fun song. It's about that girlfriend that a gay guy has is practically our wife, that but it's platonic, but we're just like, you know, otherwise we're like that tight. Where did that one come from?
You know, Liz is my best friend and my bandmate, and she's been my collaborator for like 10 years. Pretty much anything I've released for the past 10 years, she's on in one way, shape, or form, as a keyboardist, as a vocalist, as a drummer. She's just brilliant. It's just like such a brilliant mind. I love hanging out with her. We have so much fun. We're very much like siblings. It's so fun. And her band name is Deroche, D-E-R-O-C-H-E. She's amazing, mind-blowing. And sometimes she, you know, she has self-confidence issues. And I was like, you know, we had like chatted and I was falling asleep just like thinking about her. And I was like, oh, I want to write a song with her that makes her see how I see her, you know? And I thought, like, who is the most iconic woman of all time? And I was like, Cleopatra. And I was like, so then I wrote that I wrote When I See You. I don't remember exactly. It went through a lot of iterations. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I did a little voice memo and I was like, you have to write this song with me. And it was essentially Cleopatra, the idea, even though it changed a lot. And I sent it to her, and then we wrote that song together. And it was just like a love song to each other. Just like two friends who are, like, really into each other. And it's funny. It's cute. It makes me smile all the time.
It's, you know, it's actually made me smile listening to it, because I've got relationships like that with – there are a couple of women that have been incredibly important and that close. And, you know, it's like – so I could go on and on, because every song on this album I thought was right on. You know, it's like the Break Your Heart was great. Fall Before You Fly was incredibly gorgeous. You know, it's just, you know, on and on and on. I want to dovetail back, though, to some of the more painful things that you've been through, that, and how did they influence your music? You had, when you, the reason you didn't become a priest was kind of a Me Too abuse moment that you experienced. Sure. And then later in your life, you've had sort of some run-in with domestic abuse. How did those things happen, and what was the influence then on you?
Well, yeah. So I guess I'd like to clarify the first thing. The music video is about domestic abuse, but I was never in a physically abusive relationship. So I don't want that out there in the world, because that reflects pretty badly on my husband, but because it's not true. He's wonderfully sweet. So I just want to clarify that before I answer the first question. But it is something that happens, and I've had a lot of people that I know go through it, and I haven't ever seen anything reflective of it. And my director, who made La Bufadora, is what you're referring to, actually was the one who suggested it. And it was such a great idea, because, you know, I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but I tend to like to say the thing that nobody else is saying. And that's really important to me, because people are afraid of saying it. And I'm not really. Like, I'm cool with saying whatever needs to be said. So La Bufadora is really a beautiful music video, and really super impactful. It definitely stemmed from a place where Mike and I were fighting, but there was no domestic abuse. There was no domestic physical abuse in my relationship.
Right.
But we did kind of crank that dial up for the video a little bit. So,
which makes it relatable to other people. So, yeah, no, it's...
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the seminar, yeah, I mean, it was weird, man. Seminar was really weird. And there was a lot of people that wanted a different kind of relationship with me than I wanted with them. And it was, you know, I think the thing, it was like being in a pressure cooker in a way. Because I think the thing about it is you're that's where you live. So essentially there was a guy who was in love with me and stalking me, and he was also my next door neighbor, so I shared a wall with him. So if you can imagine your stalker living 18 inches from you, that was the situation in which I was in. And it kind of came to a head one night when I woke up and he was in my room, and it was just, you know, and I'm like in my bed, you know, I wish I could say this was the only experience like that in this context, but it wasn't. It was just a very strange series of events that just kept happening over and over again, often driven by closeted sexually repressed people who who joined seminaries so that they could escape their ideas of what their sexuality meant for their lives. And, you know, and then I was there. So I'm already,
right.
You know, I don't know. I became the object of their desire in ways that were inappropriate. And, I mean, I think that the question is really good. How did it affect me? I think I would harken back to what we were talking about earlier in the conversation, is that I met Mike, like, 5, 6, I don't even think it was a week, maybe 10 days. It was definitely not more than 2 weeks after I left seminary where I met Mike. And I was very wounded, and I was very broken, and I was very angry. And, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of our ideals of the world crumbling and having to rebuild how we see the world. And that was certainly a period of my life where I was completely and utterly, abused by individuals and then neglected and worse than that by the church. The church was really bad about it when I brought this to their attention. Really very, very shitty. A bunch of horrible people. And and at the end of the day, in my experience for me, who gives a shit? I met Mike. He immediately became the best thing that ever happened to me. He immediately became the perfect example of a human being that I didn't think existed in this world, especially for me when it comes to, like, being in relationship and having romantic love and all of that kind of stuff and having, like, emotional and physical intimacy. And he just like, immediately went to work healing me. And so I would say that experience is, like, remember what it feels like. Like, remember
right.
what predators feel like and make sure you stay away from them, you know? Like,
yeah.
don't let it control your life, but remember what the situation feels like. And when you're in a situation that feels like that, maybe remove yourself from that situation, you know?
No,
that's kind of what I meant with.
Yeah, and that's absolutely healthy. I think one of the things that is core in your lyrical talent is you really cut through to the point of an issue or of a situation, mm-hmm. like just what's your observation about these people with repressed sexualities and why they went in there. I mean, that explains so much about what has happened in the Catholic Church. And nobody is really explaining it the way that you just did, which is, I think, kind of profound in itself. So, unfortunately, Tom, we are down to our final 2 minutes here. And I just want to say, first of all, thank you for being on the show. And thank you for putting up with all of our technical snafus getting you here. But more importantly, thank you for being you. And thank you for the incredible music you put out. And, it's incredible. I assume that it can be downloaded anywhere people can get music.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so go get it. The album is called Remember What It Feels Like. We played two of the great songs on there. There are 13 others that are completely top-notch, not a bad song in the bunch. For those of us at Rated LGBT Radio, we will be back again actually at the end of this week where we have singer David Archuleta is going to be our guest. Looking forward to that. Also, I've got a piece coming out in the Los Angeles Blade about the last show that we did, which was Joshua, who's a trans man journalist who was embedded with the Taliban in Afghanistan. And so that story is both in our podcast and in print. And that is it for what we have for today. Thank you again very, very much to Tom Goss for being our guest and for being who he is. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Rob.
And thank you to the LA Blade. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.